Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Feels like we got about a billion things to talk about. Things done change. We saw the tea leaves pointing a certain way, made sure our schedule kind of got us right through that kind of rough patch, and now the cavalry is coming. Darius Garland practiced today, per J.B. Bickerstaff. The Rajon Rondo trade has been officially completed. We got some help at the point coming.
We got some help at the point coming. It seems like Cavs availability for the last little while has just been a revolving door. One guy goes in, one guy comes out, and Darius Garland is not listed on the injury report for tomorrow's game against the Memphis Grizzlies. Excited about that, but unfortunately Isaac Okoro will be out 2 to 3 weeks with an elbow sprain.
Honestly, given the way this season's been and the way he ran off the court, I was like, probably 3 months for him too. Why not at this point? And 100%. So, like two to three weeks, you know, to both of us, I think feels like a bit of a relief. You know, obviously Isaac adds some stuff that this team needs, and it's a bummer for Isaac, who is kind of going, kind of getting the jump shot on the right yeah. track. But you know, the Cavs can like they can provide a facsimile of what Isaac provides with other players on the roster, or just different, or you know, just play players more who add maybe some different strengths. Jetty Osman will probably get some more burn, yeah. and he can shoot a lot better than Isaac and shoot at volume better than Isaac. Lamar Stevens will kind of, you know, be their de facto perimeter stopper, which, you know, is what it is. I think he's a good defender, not a great one. We've talked mm-hmm. about that a lot, but. You know, they are learning how to win through adversity. I'll tell you that much.
Absolutely. 2 to 3 weeks for Okoro after losing Sexton and Rubio for the season feels like a huge relief, because honestly, they couldn't have survived losing both Sexton and Rubio without a replacement coming in, and to also lose Okoro for longer than that would have been a really, really tough blow. Like, I understand they're not the most important cogs. I think Garland, Mobley, and Allen are kind of the ones that drive the success more than anybody with this team. But it still adds up, right? Like, there's a cumulative toll here. With Okoro being out, I think this also provides an extended opportunity for maybe Brandon Goodwin to get some minutes, as he's still got about a week left on his 10-day. Maybe he gets a second one. We'll see there. But I do think the spot we need to start off, and the biggest Cavs news right now, is Evan freaking Mobley.
My word.
He is playing out of his gosh darn mind, Carter. He is averaging 20.8 points per game since returning from protocols on almost a 65% true shooting percentage. And the ways that he's scoring, the stuff he's showing right now is looks of a number one option offensively. Like, that type of scoring, a lot of confidence, shooting over really good defenders, just showing continuous growth when it comes to his offensive game. And as a Cavs fan, like, as much as we are invested in this season and where this is going to go, where they finish in the standings, how the playoffs are going to go, the growth of Evan Mobley is the most important thing right now when it comes to projecting this team's future.
Oh man, like that, where if you're watching on YouTube, you're seeing the play they drew up to open the game. Dude goes on a full sprint curl down to the right block and hits a fadeaway off the catch over Sabonis, like, no problem. And then he was their hub offensively in late game. He mm-hmm. was attacking Miles Turner over and over again off the bounce. I think his off-the-dribble game has much improved since he was in summer league. Yeah. And I don't think it's just strength, which he's definitely stronger. I think it's feel. I think it's understanding the length. Like, he kind of talked about how he kind of had to adjust to the pro game being more physical. And guys just being bigger than he was mm-hmm. used to. He talked about that in post game of this Pacers game. And, you know, I think it is just like, he just understands the game so well. And he really understands that as long as he's got his legs under him, no one can really mess with that fadeaway in the post. And he was cooking Torrey Craig. He was cooking, Sabonis. He was cooking Turner. Yeah. And like the thing also that he's learning is he is really learning how to use his long arms to do some weird ass finishes around the bucket, where he's like, I can generate angles that you can't get to just by being such a genetic freak.
Yeah. And I think the touch you're seeing with these turnaround shots, the pull-ups, like all of the stuff that he's doing as a jump shooter right now is something that seems really scalable, right? Like you can see how moving forward, you're going to see more and more of those jump shots. It's not hard to imagine him extending that range as he gets a little bit stronger. Like, I think that's the main thing, right? Like, he's got good mechanics. The touch is there with the jump shot. It's just a matter of kind of getting the strength and extending his range to the three-point line. And when that comes, like, look out. Like, you're already seeing, like, when you were playing those Mobley highlights right there, you're seeing when he's at the three-point line, guys are coming up to him because they don't want to let him get ahead of steam because he can kind of do the spin move, or he can reach around guys, or you're giving him passing lanes. Like, there's so many things that he can do without like a proven three-point shot, but at least the threat of it and the ability that he has off the dribble makes teams not want to give him that momentum, which is so massive. And that kind of confidence and the way that the defenses already respect him is a big part of why that pairing with Jared Allen already works. They're not exactly proven spacers. I think Allen had another airball corner three.
That was an adventure of a shot, Jarrett.
I jumped off my couch, though. I was giving it the three-point hands. I was ready to do the three to the dome like Carmelo Anthony. Every single time he shoots one, I'm here for it. But even without the proven three-point shots for those guys, they generate spacing because of how versatile they are. The ability to put the ball on the floor for Evan Mobley, their passing. Like, defenses have to respect them in ways that you wouldn't normally expect for guys that don't have proven outside shots.
And how freaking good is Mobley's touch? I mean, that ball just kisses the rim when it, I mean, I'm not sure I've ever seen a big that rattles in as many of the shots that he rattles in. And maybe there is a degree of luck there, and obviously you know, nothing's better than swishing it, but like the fact that he can put it up so soft at the angles he's putting it up at means he's gonna get those shooters rolls a lot more than you think he would. And like, I'm sure if you're a fan of an opposing team, especially last night, you're seeing the ones that are like hitting all four sides of the rim before it drops. And it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And, but that's not just luck. It's mechanical to some extent.
Right, and when it's coming off the rim like that, it also creates opportunities for Jared Allen as an offensive rebounder versus when you don't have touch and the ball just kind of kicks out that and generates transition opportunities.
We call those the Westbrooks.
Right, the Westbrooks, right? Like, those create opportunities for the other team in transition. It doesn't give you a real chance for an offensive rebound unless you're the one putting it back. Like, this is all so significant, and I think what he's showing right now is coming at the perfect time as well, because with Ricky Rubio now confirmed out for the season with a torn ACL, what we saw was first Sexton was that guy when the half court offense breaks down and you just need someone to create some chaos to get a look up. It was Sexton. Once Sexton went down, Ricky Rubio was that guy. He's the chaos grenade, right? Like, when things aren't working out, he's going to be willing to take kind of a wild shot. He'll make wild shots. He'll make wild passes. Like, he would generate offense when everything else is broken down. Rajon Rondo is not going to be that. When you bring in someone like Rondo to replace Ricky Rubio, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to use all the same possessions the same way Ricky Rubio did, and it's just how good of a job does he do with that, which I think I've seen some of that conversation. Like, well, he doesn't do the things that Ricky does, so how does this work out? No. The way it's going to work, in all likelihood, is Evan Mobley is going to be that offensive initiator in those situations. You're going to see more and more opportunities for him to create against a set defense because the shot generation just isn't there, especially if Darius Garland's off the floor. Evan Mobley is going to need to be assertive in the ways that he is right now. And the fact that he's doing this already with Garland out, like, that is really, really exciting. And it at least gives you some confidence that the Cavs are going to be able to generate enough offense to compete with teams during this stretch while we try to figure things out before the trade deadline.
There's a reason that teams go young and just give their young players a lot of reps in adverse situations.
Yeah.
Now, there are arguments as to whether that's really effective or just if playing within yourself for a while, kind of like the Celts have enabled some of their kids to do, is really the road to it. But either way, there's a reason people do it, and it's you kind of stretch your game out in what tends to be losses early in your career. So when you're ready to actually be a winning player, you've already kind of functioned as that number one guy.
Yeah.
And while that's not the Cavs' intent with Mobley, it's been the reality. He's getting a ton of reps where it's like, hey, Evan, we just need you to figure something out, please.
Yeah.
And while that isn't really his defined skill set, the fact that he's succeeding the way he is really surprising and really, really exciting, because it pretends kind of you like, I feel like this is the little stretch of like, okay, 2-3 years down the road, this might be a little bit what it looks like. Against great teams, he's not going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. Against teams who have their stuff together a little bit better on the defensive side of the ball, you know, like, we've seen him get stifled offensively when he tries to create. So, like, when it's not like light switch flipped, he's just going to do this from now on. But I do think it's just this beautiful little window into what he looks like as a initiator and high volume shot taker, because he has not been a high volume player thus far in his career.
Right. And when he does do this against some of the more elite teams, the one that always comes to mind is Milwaukee, because they're one of the few teams with just length absolutely everywhere. When teams do take things away from you and he's forced to try against them, it gives you usable film of, okay, this is what they did to take this away. This is what you're going to have to develop as a counter. And I think that's really, really informative. And it's unfortunate that we're already putting this much on Mobley in some ways, because I just felt like this team was so well suited to kind of keep everybody in their ideal roles when they had Sexton, when they had Rubio, Garland. Like, there were so many quality options here, but it's really exciting that after some time off, which probably is in the long term is going to benefit Mobley, the fact that he had basically 2 weeks off in the middle of the season here to kind of rest, to get that hip right and whatnot. The fact that now you're seeing these flashes is so exciting, and it's really coming at the perfect time.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I think if there was anything you could kind of ding Mobley for this season, it was probably volume of, you know, shooting volume. It's like, hey, yeah, it, maybe some efficiency stuff. And then also, like, hey, you're on a team that doesn't suck. It really helps when your teammates don't suck in the NBA. What, look at Cade Cunningham. He has set up his teammates for so many good looks that they just couldn't finish, you know? He tends to make the right play, and he's not often rewarded for it in Detroit right now. And I think...
And his good individual defense doesn't get noticed because there's so many poor defenders around him, whereas Mobley is... He's got Jared Allen with him. He's got guys that understand what they're doing. Even Brandon Goodwin, like, he was calling out where guys were supposed to be defensively last game. Like, that to me is so exciting that, like, the coaches have the attentions of even two-way guys that are coming into the roster, that they know where they're supposed to be. They know what the assignments are. There's just so much understanding, and that's a really encouraging sign.
Yeah, man. It's just really, really fun. And, like, you know, it almost, like, if you did, like, you know, I was, like, a little bit, like, wonder how Mobley would look if he had landed in Houston, you know, kind of alone. It's like, no, he would be pretty good there, too.
He would be good.
And not like, just flashing signs, you know, but, like, actually, and in some ways, that roster was kind of better suited for him in terms of all the space and the fact that their bigs could shoot, you know, in terms of, like, showcasing his offensive game. Obviously, this roster was great for his ability to actually develop and be a winning player from Jump Street.
Having a point guard is helpful.
Yeah, and I do think we should probably move to talking about the new point guard addition for the Cavs. Obviously, Darius is coming back, and the Cavs traded Denzel Valentine's primarily for his partially guaranteed deal. To now New York. It's turned into a three-teamer to pick up Rajon Rondo and kind of at least try to start plugging up the dam of all the stuff that Ricky Rubio did for this team.
Yeah.
How do you think Kobe did?
The first impression I had with this deal was I was just happy at the speed of it. Like, I don't know if Rondo's going to be available for Memphis. Obviously, he's coming out of health and safety protocol, so there's going to be conditioning. He's going to need to practice with the team and whatnot. So we'll probably see him at some point this week. We don't know when that's going to be. But just the speed to acquire someone like Rajon Rondo and to do it without giving up, like, any draft picks. So they didn't even give cash considerations here. I guess there was cash in the deal. I don't know who sent it where.
I believe it was the Knicks that sent some cash, or maybe the Lakers sent some cash to the Knicks for their trouble
to buy him out. Yeah, because the Knicks did cut Denzel Valentine. So anyways, that's not really relevant, but like to find this so quickly, it gave me comfort.
And it was a player I didn't really have my eye on.
No, God, no. Like, again, the Lakers are a team that's trying to compete this year. And I mean, Rondo is not the Rondo that he was at the peak
even
of his
in the
powers.
Bubble.
Even at the bubble, right? And he was pretty good last season, especially with the Clippers. But he hasn't shown a lot this year. And some people might point to the fact that he's played about a third of his minutes with Russell Westbrook, and that's just never going to work. But, like, there's limitations to his game. There always has been, and certainly are there while he ages. But getting Rondo so quickly and kind of giving some time before the trade deadline, like, they now have basically 3-4 weeks here to assess what he looks like with the team, to not kind of overburden Kevin Pangos, who continues to kind of look physically overmatched in the NBA. And I just feel like it allows Kobe and Altman and the rest of the front office to take a more patient approach to the trade deadline. You now no longer have this super pressing need. Obviously, there's going to be a drop-off with Rondo. You're not going to ask him to do all the same things as Ricky Rubio, but it at least gives like a baseline of competence and another veteran voice that can help out JB Bickerstaff kind of be an extended coach on the floor. So I think there is a tremendous value to that.
Yeah, I loved the deal from immediately because I kind of assumed it was going to be a fake second or something of that ilk. Mm-hmm. I love it because they take a guy who's not in the rotation when they're healthy, and Denzel, who I thought was actually pretty good for this team, but wasn't a rotation player, didn't have to give up any draft capital, even fake draft capital with, you know, crazy protections and all that fun stuff. Didn't even have to do that. And what they did is, while Rondo stylistically is not the kind of player Rubio is, like, mm-hmm. I think people see two pure point guards who can't shoot and go, oh, they're probably pretty much the same. Ricky loves playing fast and chaotic, and Rondo's like LeBron a little bit. He's like that control freak. He loves holding on to the ball. He'll push
after a defensive rebound or a turnover, but if something's not there, he's going to pull it out and try to run the offense. Yeah. So like he's a much more methodical player.
And he won't try to generate that advantage as much. If the advantage is there, he'll take it, but he won't try to generate it. And he also is a bit more of a connector at this point of his career. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want him running as many pick and rolls as the Cavs were running with Ricky.
Yeah.
But what I love about this acquisition is, while I don't think stylistically they are similar, the Cavs can still ask Rajon Rondo to do a lot of the same things they were asking Ricky to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this in the Ricky podcast, and I talked about all the reasons why I was so devastated he was hurt on behalf of the Cavs, because he did a few things, right? He was their primary backup point guard to keep the trains on time when Darius was sitting. Rajon Rondo can keep the trains on time.
Yep.
Okay, so what else do we ask him to do? We ask him to play two guard lineups and kind of spell Darius and let Darius take some plays off for once, or move off ball for a little bit. Rajon Rondo can do that. Mm-hmm. They asked Ricky Rubio to hit his spot up threes. Rajon Rondo is not a great three-point shooter. He certainly cannot shoot them off the bounce at all like Ricky was doing.
Yeah,
he can hit some spot-up threes. He is not the Rajon Rondo of old that you literally ignored. while the style is different and the output will be worse, he will be, I'm guessing, 70% of what Ricky was giving. And that's not an insignificant drop-off. In a lot of ways, he kind of allows them to continue playing in the way they want to play.
Yeah.
And some of his warts, I think, are mitigated here. The shooting is not great. The Cavs can flank him on those bench lineups with really good shooters that are really smart players.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a good defensive player anymore. He's a crazy gambler. But you know who's really good to cover up bad gambles? The Frobley front court. Yeah. So, you know, like, I just see, I think that there's a very small chance this goes terribly. I think mm-hmm. that there's a very good chance that he helps a little. And there's like a 5 to 10% chance he helps a lot. I don't think it's a huge chance, but I think the downside is really, really low, especially given what they gave up to get him. And he just adds a lot of supplementary value to this team and doesn't force Kobe Altman to rush to make a panic trade.
Yeah, it took me some time to kind of marinate with this, and I also had to kind of confront my own biases because Rajon Rondo is a longtime Boston Celtic, and I'm a petty bastard. Like, at my core, I am petty, and I am small. And there's also the issues that Rondo had in locker rooms in Chicago and Dallas in particular. And one of the things that kind of comforted me was when Woj reported that, hey, Rondo's actually really excited to get more playing time in Cleveland. Obviously, the Cavs actually being successful this season, I think, is a good indicator of how much buy-in you're going to get from him. And there's a real opportunity for Rondo to contribute. And like you said, I think they're in position to kind of really showcase his strengths while mitigating some of his weaknesses. Like, I still have confidence that Rajon Rondo is going to be able to run a good pick and roll. Like, even against Indiana, there were multiple times where it's very clear that the lob to Jared Allen was available, and Kevin Pangles just didn't see that. Like, he wasn't throwing those lobs in that game. Even Goodwin, like, there were opportunities that were missed and left on the table there. I don't think Rondo's going to miss those opportunities.
Yeah, like, Rajon Rondo is going to love playing. And, oh, gosh, I left this off the list, Justin. That we needed Ricky Rubio to throw good entry passes into the post. Because even Darius isn't great at it yet. I mean, entry passes to the post is like a dead art. Mm-hmm. And the Cavs actually get a lot of value out of someone who can get it to the spot without making their big pop out another 7 feet to go get it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact
he's going to throw good entry passes, he's going to throw good lobs. Like, there's a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, and the fact that he gambles on defense, like, that's not the end of the world. Like you said, because there's such good support behind him, like, that's one of the things that Lauri Markkanen does. He's not necessarily always playing the best positional defense and keeping his feet moving in front of guys. He's getting his hands in passing lanes. He's being disruptive. And I think the main thing that you lose going from Rondo to Rubio is variance, both good and bad. Like, Ricky will attempt some outlandish things on the basketball court that sometimes you just need to do, right? Sometimes it's not necessarily called for and it goes for a pick six the other way. But Rondo, like, both good and bad, I think the mistakes he makes on the court aren't going to be as kind of head scratching as some of the ones Rubio makes, but you also lose that high upside with him on the court.
He'll disappear.
Yeah,
he'll have moments where it's like, oh, Rondo's out there?
Yeah, you'll forget that Rondo's out there. He's not going to have like a 27-point triple-double like Ricky Rubio did. And other guys are going to need to step up and contribute as a scorer. But you look at the second unit, and especially when Okoro comes back, like, I think Okoro might kind of help in transition. Like, Rondo gets the rebound, you give it up to Okoro, and kind of, he's out there to push the pace. But if it's like Rondo, Okoro, Jetty, Kevin Love, Evan Mobley playing as the backup five, like, I can see that lineup working well. And especially when you consider how well Kevin Love is playing and being just like all-star Kevin Love once again.
If I were to ask you what Rajon Rondo's season high in points was, what would you guess it was?
7.
8.
So, ooh, yep. I was close.
You were close. So, like, he's just not a volume guy at this point. Yeah. Like, he'll take a wide open layup if you really, really play the pass, but he wants to make the pass.
Yeah.
Always has, even to the detriment of his team, in my opinion, back in the old days. I did want to ask you about the personality fit, because Ricky Rubio is the king of good vibes.
Yep.
Everyone loves Ricky, loves to mentor. Rondo has a mixed history here.
Mm-hmm. He
was really beloved by the younger players on the Three Alphas Bulls team with Wade and Jimmy Butler. And also, you know, kind of pouted his way out of Dallas in the past. What are you kind of expecting from him culturally? Because whether or not he is super bought in, the vibes will be different with Rondo as opposed to Rubio.
Agreed. I guess, well, one, I'm always going to be hopeful, right? Like, that's the way that I'm just kind of geared and wired. But what Rondo did when he still felt like he had a lot of prime left in him, or that he could still contribute in the ways that he did when he was at his best, Dallas and Chicago in particular, I don't think that's the Rondo you're getting now. I think there's more of an understanding of what his role is. And you had guys like Lauri Markkanen and Goodwin that have already spoken up positively about their experiences with Rondo and what he can bring to the table. I do think like his ability to work with Garland to be another voice in his ear is a real benefit. You have Sidney Lowe, who's been in the league for a long time and's worked with a lot of guards. I think that's to the Cavs' advantage as well. Like I think culturally there's a structure in place to really kind of help smooth this transition. I think there is opportunity available for him. That's a big deal because he's not out here trying to compete for minutes. It's not going to be like Kevin Pangos at the start of the season where there's just clearly not a role for him. There is a need for Rondo to fill. And I think the combination of opportunity, fit, coaching staff, culture that the Cavs have, I think it really does mitigate some of those risks. And like you said, if things do go worst case scenario, there is still time until the trade deadline to make other moves. But this gives them a real good opportunity to give this an honest try, especially with Okoro out. Like, there is a need for Rondo to play minutes right away. So I do think that this is a good opportunity to find out what he has left in the tank, how much of this has to do with just what a mess the Lakers are right now and playing with Russell Westbrook. I looked at the net rating splits and he had a minus 20 net rating with Westbrook and a minus 5 without him. Like, it was just so clearly not working and a terrible fit in the backcourt. And I think even Darius Garland's growth that he's shown this season playing alongside Ricky Rubio and his ability to play off ball, that experience is going to help ease this transition and make it easier than it would have been if Rondo was the backup point guard to start this season.
Yeah, I think that ultimately I'm not worried at all about the vibes. I'm really not. The Woj report that he was excited to kind of have a chance to earn a role and work on a team that actually has a chance to make some noise in the postseason. He didn't say that part. I editorialized the back
half. I liked
it. But like the fact that he's kind of excited and eager to play a role for this team makes me feel really good. And I think this is where the Cavs investing in the kind of kids that they have is so helpful, because Darius clearly relished learning from Ricky Rubio. Evan Mobley clearly relishes learning from Kevin Love. And like when you have young players like that, that like see these basketball savants, these veterans that have not only great players, but have been around the league for a really long time and seen a lot of what the league has to offer. And like no one has ever questioned Rajon Rondo's basketball brilliance. Like everyone behind the scenes talks about like how he's got, you know, he's a true savant. And it's just so hard to see Darius not immediately, the second he shows up, going, "Oh, please teach me." Yeah. Because that's been the way he's worked with Ricky. That's the way he worked at Team USA when he was at camp. He was talking about the players that he was kind of seeking out to get tips on how to be a better defensive player. Like, he's a very hungry learner. Mm-hmm. And like that's why I just think that relationship could be really, really strong from Jump Street. And Rubio is not like Rondo. Like, Rubio seems to be a lot more of a positive force. Like, there's going to be a few times where I think Rondo hurts some folks' feelings. Mm-hmm. He can be a little crabby in that way. But like in terms of like, but it's my expectation that those are more micro instances and not the macro.
Yeah. And as long
because
as
of the deference
guys,
these kids show.
Yeah. And I think as long as you have the right people in place, like the coaches that you believe in and whatnot, I think all of those instances, if they do occur, can be teaching opportunities. And you also touched on something I'm a little excited about. I'm kind of excited for someone with some edge to be on this team.
They're a bunch of nice guys.
I think they needed somebody that's going to stand up for them on the court.
This is an old school take, Justin.
This is an old school take, and I'm really excited.
Rub some dirt in it.
They have someone that'll throw a punch on a basketball court, and I'm really excited about that. That's going to stand up. That's going to get aggressive in refs' ears and complain and advocate for them. I'm excited to get a little bit of a dick on this team because that is what Rondo is, and I think it's a missing spice in what the Cavs have going on in this soup that they've got going on. I think they needed just a little bit more spice, and I think Rajon Rondo can bring that to the table.
Yeah, a little spice in the workplace never hurts things. Well, it can, but ideally it's the appropriate amount of spice. So, again, like I don't want to overstate this because he's worse than Rubio. The team is worse today than they were the day before the Rubio injury.
Yep.
He's not as good anymore. Rubio could have really great shooting nights.
Someone else is going to have to do that.
Yeah, like
it's that simple.
Yeah, like he was a great point of attack defender on those second unit lineups. Rondo's not going to do that. He's just not anymore at this stage of his career. But what he can do is keep, as I said, keep the trains running on time. And there's a lot of value to that because, again, I think I was so distraught after the Ricky injury, not because Ricky was so inherently unbelievable as a player. Well, I think he was a very good player. Mm-hmm. It was that the Cavs had so few options within their roster to provide a facsimile of what he adds. And the Cavs have a roster that can now, not in the same way, but should be able to provide a facsimile of what Rubio offered and let them continue to properly evaluate this team and what it needs. I don't think this changes what Kobe Altman should do at the deadline. Unless it just means being less desperate, you know, mm-hmm. but like, I still think like this did kind of expose like, hey, post Sexton injury, they probably needed another ball handler and creator. Yep. They still do because mm-hmm. it's not like Rondo is the picture of health either.
Yep.
At this point in his career. So,
and Okoro was showing some of that and now he's
hurt. So,
some time, right?
So clearly you need some extra time. And some extra players, and I think that's still the case. But again, this gets you there, so you're not negotiating against every team in the league from a position of weakness. Can I go on an off Cavs tangent real quick?
Okay.
This one has been kind of bubbling in my mind. I think Daryl Morey might be playing this right at this point.
Oh, okay.
But because
plead your case, because you know I'm pretty on the record as a Morey skeptic.
Well, I didn't like what they were doing either. We talked about that when we met in Cleveland for the home opener. And it's what I realized is if you didn't trade him right away, this was actually the best. Sure, the value dipped, but Morey is waiting out other teams to just land in disadvantageous situations where they can't pick their litter quite as well. Like if he goes and gets Caris LeVert or someone from the Pacers goes to one of these other teams that all of a sudden is like, oh crap, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We need a boost as opposed to just everyone just trying to pick off Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Like it actually, I don't agree with how he's played this in the macro, but at this point, I actually think it's very smart to just wait till another team gets desperate.
Your thoughts? I guess there's advantages to it. I mean, you look at some of the reported offers, and again, the wear and tear you're putting on Embiid, and it might not be.
I still don't like it, but like this. I guess my point is, I think we all kind of resigned ourselves to like Daryl's not going to get a very good return on Ben, or he's just not going to trade him. And I think he might get a pretty okay return.
Oh, I think he's going to get
right
a good return.
Comes along.
Like you listen to Tim McMahon of offers that are still out there. I'm pretty sure on the Hoop Collective they said that De'Aaron Fox is still being offered. Like they're going to get something, and it's just mind-boggling to me that it hasn't happened yet. But you know what? That's a completely different story.
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry to divert us, but I've been sitting on this one.
And you went to one of my sweet spots because you know I can go on for 2 hours about Daryl Morey. Damn spreadsheets. Anyways, I do think one advantage, because when we were talking about the Rondo injury in the last podcast, we were discussing, okay, if you have one bullet in the chamber, what are you going to prioritize? Because you're missing two significant pieces in Rondo and Sexton. They both brought very different things to the table that the Cavs need, including someone that can go out there and generate some offense and kind of playmaking for himself and others. And we were discussing, if you only have one bull in the chamber, are you trying to replace what Rondo, or sorry, what Rubio brought to the table? Or are you trying to replace what Sexton brought to the table? And I think now, if you only have one bull in the chamber and you can only really kind of bring in one more talent to help supplement this core and make a run of it this season, I do think having Rondo here makes it easier to add, whether it's a large combo guard or a playmaking wing, and not really worry about the point guard position. Because if you were just bringing in like a Caris LeVert or someone of that ilk that can provide some playmaking, but isn't really a backup point guard, there is going to be a hole in the rotation. Now, if you're bringing in someone like that, that's bringing in supplemental playmaking, and you have a backup point guard in Rondo, and if break glass in case of emergency, you know, Kevin Pangos at least won't turn the ball over, if I'm painting it generously. Like, I feel like you're in a better position when you are approaching the trade deadline, where you can go out and get that secondary playmaker and not really worry about the backup point guard position in the same way.
Yeah, no, it just is a really smart move. It is the way better than they could have gotten on the free agent market.
Yeah.
I feel so much better about this than having a guy like Jeff Teague or someone like that.
See, that's the thing. Like, I think part of why we were so down with Rubio getting hurt, beyond the fact that, like, Rubio is one of the nicest guys ever. He's going to, whether or not he's played his last game with the Cavs, he's going to go down as one of my favorite Cavs that we've had, especially when it comes to role players. It was, hey, so many of these guys have already been kind of snatched up. And if Brandon Goodwin, as an example, was your replacement, because that was the best guard that was available out of the G League and in the free agent market, like, that is a totally different calculus of when compared to, okay, now we brought in Rondo for essentially nothing, and you have other guys that you can give minutes to and opportunities to and try to try different things out. Like, that's a completely different conversation. There just weren't good options available. So to create one basically out of nothing, and to once again kind of address an issue with this roster by your relationships with teams. Like, when the Lakers were trying to create roster spots last season, the Cavs took on JaVale McGee's contract, second-round pick. They had some non-guaranteed contracts to send to the Lakers, and they helped facilitate that deal. You have to think that being accommodating, working with teams, helping them out when they have a need and they have something that might be able to assist you, like, those relationships that you build with other front offices put you in position to become a third team in a trade or to take on Rajon Rondo and address one of your needs when the Lakers are trying to build a roster spot. Like, those moves continuously happening, whether it's getting in as a third team or helping teams address a need while also helping yourself, that really gives me confidence that this front office has good relationships, that they're able to get deals done, and it gives me confidence that the relationships are good around the league.
Yeah, it feels really good, man. I think that this team has a real chance to kind of, like, There was off the rails potential for this team as they were dealing with COVID. Obviously, the updated protocols for going down to 5 days really helps. Trading for Rondo helps. Darius coming back helps. It just feels like I'm really abusing train metaphors today, but like I feel like the season is very unlikely to go off the rails. We're back to, like, I think we should at least be, you know, in the conversation for 4, 5, 6 seed. Yeah. Whereas when Rubio went down, we were both like, well, they should probably just hang on and make the play-in. Like, yeah. I feel like my hopes are buoyed just a little bit. And again, it's not because Rondo is so great. It's just because of where the roster was at before the deal. And I feel pretty good. But I do want to just ask, like, I mean, do you still have eyes only for Caris LeVert at the deadline?
He's probably of the names that have been, like, reported to be on the market, the one that interests me the most, like, because once again, it kind of is that hybrid of playmaking and scoring. I shouldn't say thank goodness, but Cavs were fortunate that he tested positive for COVID or went into protocols before the game, because if Caris LeVert was playing that game, they probably wouldn't have got a much needed win against the Pacers. Getting a win before Darius comes back, really, really nice to put that in your back pocket. But yeah, he's probably the name that's out there. But the nice thing about bringing Rondo in is I feel less pressure to like just speculate on trades and have those kind of conversations because there's a glaring need. Like I just don't find that as interesting as discussing what's actually going on the court. So the fact that we get some content out of this move, adding Rondo to the mix and whatnot, and it saves us from kind of spinning our tires and just kind of speculating on what is and isn't possible is a huge relief for me, both when it comes to this podcast and also just my experience as a fan.
Yeah, it will be nice to just get to like focus on have basketball normalized a little bit.
I am a little bummed out. Sorry to cut you off, but I am a little bummed out that Kevin Pangos didn't make more of the opportunity. Like you look at the last four games.
It's terribly disappointing.
It's super disappointing because there's flashes when he plays that look decent. Last four games, 16 assists, only 3 turnovers to those 16 assists. Like that's nice. He's making good decisions out there. He just can't get anything to fall. And some of that is just kind of lack of size and athleticism. That's undoubtedly making the transition to the NBA more difficult. But then also just the fact that he's not hitting threes. Like there
23% for the season open for one of the best shooters from in Europe last year.
Yeah, open looks from a proven, really good shooter. Shot well in the G League. Like, and he's shooting 8% over the last four games from three. Like that is really unfortunate. I feel for him. It's a missed opportunity, but you know what? Like at least now we're in a position where you're not relying on him to figure it out. I do think he deserves some credit for, like I said, the 16 assists, 3 turnovers. Like there's an understanding of what he's supposed to do out there. He just can't execute and finish plays, which is really unfortunate, but now you're not in a position where you're relying on that. So that's at least positive.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think probably Kevin Pangos would tell you. He is like, man, I wish I made more of the run I did get, you know, because this isn't just an audition for, you know, for him as a Cavalier, but his, you know, his NBA future, you know. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think we were all rooting for a guy like it's a great story, best player, one of the best point guards in Europe that grew up in the States, made his NBA debut as a 28-year-old, and you're like, oh, man, the Cavs might, because like, the thing is, like, I don't want to. We have our friends from Locked On Cavs, I believe, coming on this week as guests. But the last episode, Evan kind of fought at some of the critics of Pangos, where he's like, "Hey, he was the third point. He's a third point guard. He was like, this is as much as you can ask of him." And I think that's a little unfair to people who are disappointed, because like the whole thing, like, remember when they traded for Rubio, a big part of the Pangos conversation was, If they got to trade, if they end up trading Ricky at midseason, Pangos can be a backup for them.
Yeah, I was convinced that he was going to at least be better than Dele was last year, which
and he hasn't been. So like ultimately, it's disappointing for him. The Cavs have kind of insulated themselves from needing that. And you know what? I do hope he gets more run, because the reality is he is not a 23%. Three-point shooter, even at NBA range. Like, come on. So, like, you know, while Lori shoots 15% over a 9-game stretch, he gets the rest of the season to get right. Kevin Pangos isn't going to get that shot. So, you know, I do hope he gets another chance at some point in the season for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And he has a chance.
Knock on wood. Let's hope it's like in blowouts and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're just getting reps. Good. Getting more reps.
Be careful. Be careful,
Carter. I care about hell, you. Like some rest games for Darius, you know, here and there. Like, I hope he gets a few shots, and kind of makes more of them. Because obviously, I don't think this run has been what we wanted to see from him. But you know who we should talk about before we wrap this podcast? And I actually kind of regret not getting there earlier. Kevin Love is balling out, my friend.
Look at you, you wordy bastard! Woo. I had such a great segue. When you were talking about Pangos, I was gonna say, you know what? Like, I might have been wrong about Pangos, but at least I was also wrong about Kevin Love.
Yo, you were very wrong about Kevin Love.
I was very, very wrong about Kevin Love. And
Captain buy him out over here.
Exactly. Like, a lot of the conversation in the offseason was, okay, like, he seems very broke physically, wasn't even able to really contribute with Team USA, and I was ready for kind of a fresh start for Kevin Love. And he got a fresh start only with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he is playing out of his damn mind right now. Over 25 points per game over his last four games. Shooting the hell out of the basketball. Shooting 53% from three-point range on 10 attempts. Over 10 attempts per game in the last five games. He's playing absolutely fantastic. And I have completely changed my tune. And I am an emotional creature. Everybody that listens to this podcast knows that. I am very here for Kevin Love getting to ride out the rest of his contract in Cleveland. Like, I want him to be a contributor for this team, because I do think that there has been consistent value the last couple of years of him off the court. Even when I talked to Martin Rickman prior to last season, he was talking about how Kevin Love in the offseason is on the phone with Sexton like almost every night, going over film with him, talking to him, giving him advice. And you see example after example this season of the young players crediting him for being a consistent voice in the locker room. And when you need a veteran presence, like, I can't think of a better guy than someone that's won championships in Cleveland, or won a championship in Cleveland. Well, let's not go plural yet. We'll get there in, I think we decided, 2-3 years. But you know, like, he's won a championship in Cleveland. He's got veteran experience. He's someone that can help Evan Mobley, Jared Allen. Like, there's so much value on and off the court. And I'm in love with this story right now. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, it's just really, really fun. And, you know, not to pat myself on the back too hard, I already did on Twitter earlier today, but, like, this was a guy who I just kind of felt like I was on an island with. I was like, listen, like, I know the Olympics thing didn't go well, but, like, we just all agreed he sucked now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not so sure about that. I thought the Cavs were better with him on the floor last year, even at as limited as he was, and just in terms of adding some verve and some zip to a pretty muddy offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, like, listen, in the right role with the right attitude, and both those things are, and with the right health, and it's not wrong that people were skeptical. I wasn't, like, wholehearted, like, 100%, Kevin Love gonna have a great year next year. You know, so it's not like I was that far out on a limb, but I was like, there's a better chance than anyone else was acknowledging that this guy was going to actively be helpful for this team. And he's really helped keep them afloat during the stretch when they've been down some of their offensive playmakers. Now, some of the weaknesses are still there. I think their defense has been worse because they've had to rely on him so much offensively and play him more minutes than they probably would like. And he does cause some limitations on that end, but, like, you just can't argue with the results. He's averaged 20 straight points or five games with 20 plus. Yeah. And it's been really, really fun to see. And, you know, I just wanted this dude to stick around.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things too is, like, they need what he brings to the second unit. Like, he is one of the few guys with point guards being out and not really having a proven option at that position. He's one of the few bigs on this team that doesn't rely on someone else to create looks for him, right? Like, he has enough of an offensive repertoire to generate good offense for himself, over almost 3 assists per game coming off the bench these last 5 games. Like, he's contributing in so many different ways and giving them some juice that they need. Like, when you are making that downgrade from Ricky Rubio to Rajon Rondo, having a stretch four that is able to create for himself and others and give juice to that second unit is going to be really important. And we've talked about Evan Mobley absorbing more of that offensive load. Some of it's also going to be Kevin Love. And the fact that he's putting up 25 points per game in only 28 minutes per game, I think is a really encouraging sign, because as this team gets healthier, they're going to be able to manage his minutes, keep him in a role where he is probably has a better likelihood of staying healthy, better likelihood of staying productive. A lot of the conversations we had about Larry Nance Jr., where it's like, we want to keep him at like 26 to 28 minutes, and that gives him the best chance to be productive and healthy. So I think this is a really great situation. He brings so much to the table that the Cavs need on and off the floor. And it's just such a great story. And I'm so happy that there is one of the guys that contributed a championship kind of having a second chapter beyond that championship run that's positive. Like, that
this
that
was just always, this was always the outcome that I wanted the most for Kevin Love's end of Kevin's career in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, maybe they do at some point trade him. I hope they don't. I'd rather keep the good vibes going, and I don't even care if I'm wrong. It's like, I'm a fan of the team. And sometimes fandom is being wrong and not caring.
And, like, it's also being emotional, which I think, like, we don't necessarily apologize for, right? Like, we try to at least acknowledge what our emotions and bias are and present both sides of the argument. But at the end of the day, like, we're fans. Like, this is what we care about. And, like, to me,
don't let Twitter fool you either, man. People in Cleveland still love this guy.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like when well, we went,
we
to,
talked
when,
about it. Yeah, we talked about it when we were at the games to start the season, where he coming off the bench, he was still getting standing ovations by the crowd. Right, like it's there's a lot of goodwill for Kevin Love, and when I
and he earned the bad will. Let's not dance around it. But like the reality is, you're more than the sum of a few actions during lost seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
At least to me, you are.
And that was something that he owned up to. And when I advocated for them extending Kevin Love before it happened, back when I was writing it through the sword, part of the calculus was this is a game that if he's healthy should age well, because he is someone that can pass. He's someone that can shoot. Stretch bigs work with almost anybody. And at the time you had Colin Sexton drafted, they needed spacing for a slashing player. And the Cavs still have a lot of slashers. They're a team that plays inside out. And his spacing is going to make things easier for Rajon Rondo. It's going to continue to make things easier for Darius Garland and everyone else on the team. So I really do think that it's one of the best stories. And as we try to make up for the production lost by Sexton, lost by Rubio, Kevin Love is going to be an important part of that equation.
Yeah, I think he will too. I think he, like, I loved the archetype of having this bench with a great veteran guard and a great veteran big that mm-hmm. helps these kids along. And I think it's really important for this team to continue to have players in that archetype until the kids kind of come into their own a bit. Yep. So it's just cool. I just love him as a player. You know, we've been rooting for him for gosh, was 2015 was the trade?
Yeah.
Or was no, it was 2014.
Yeah.
So, you know, about 7.5 years now.
Yeah. More than half of his career.
And you know what? I hope Jerry Colangelo feels bad, because this dude was clearly hurt, and he crapped all over him. When he was just trying to play, you know, do his best to play for his country.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad we get to see healthy Kevin Love be an impact player again, even if the way he does it is different.
Absolutely. It's definitely one of the best stories of the year. And I'm just happy that even though Okoro is missing some time here, the vibes are once again feeling a lot better. I'm feeling good about where this team is. I'm excited to see how they compete against the Memphis Grizzlies. A little bit of a rematch to see if they can take the home win there in Darius Garland's hopeful return. But you know what? Thank you so much to everybody listening. If you're watching on YouTube Live, make sure to like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.